There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
BT Sport Pods.
A 64-game season that culminated in 3 trophies and some famous nights in Europe. Archie Knox, Mark Hatley, and Stuart McCall were part of Walter Smith's Rangers in the monumental 1992-93 campaign, and that is where we head for our latest podcast, Curry Club, the Scottish Football Sessions.
Gentlemen, here we go, 30 years on from one of the most momentous seasons in Scottish football history. Great to be with you, Archie, Mark, Stuart, to look back on that incredible year for the football club. First of all, when someone phones you up and asks you to come and discuss the 1992-93 campaign, Archie, that team that you worked with, and of course the management team you were involved with Walter as well, does it fill you with pride that people still want to discuss that year?
Oh, I mean, what a phenomenal team. Yeah. I mean, that was the year of the three foreigner rule and stuff like that, and a lot of people had to leave and other ones brought in and stuff like that. But they were all sort of British players, more or less. And what a fantastic dressing room. Yeah. When you walked into that dressing room, there was never a problem. And at Rangers, you know, everybody knew that, you know, turning up for training, you had to be collar and tie and stuff. And the foreign players, you know, then they were surprised by all this. But there was never one of them said that, look, we're not doing that. We turn up in jeans and a T-shirt or stuff. But they knew that they had to turn up with their collar and tie. And it was great. They followed that to the letter, these guys. Yeah. Mikhailichenko, the whole lot. Mm-hmm. And they were absolutely brilliant at it. Yeah. And to be associated with that team, and these two guys here that are sitting next to me, I mean, the greatest time of my life in football, you know, for the 7 years that I was there, and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Easiest time of your career.
Well, it was the easiest time in my career.
Well, because you were working with these guys, and one thing that people always seem to mention about that team was the team spirit you had, the characters in that dressing room, and I think that really drove you on that season, Mark.
Yes.
3 trophies, the treble for the first time in 15 years as well, and that European run, which I'll come back to in more detail.
100% what Archie was saying there, you know, it was the atmosphere surrounded, but it was a British mentality, you know, it was a British-based team, you know. You got your 3 foreigners coming in, we had Chenks, Peter Huestra,
Mikhailichenko.
And the key is, when you're getting foreigners in, because European football is completely different, right, to what we were doing. I mean, we were partying more as much as we were playing, because you enjoy the good moments, and we had lots of good moments. Mm. And they bought straight into that. Oh, we'll have a bit of this. This is great fun. You know, you're winning together. We're having a drink together. You know, we're just enjoying the moment in the moment, and that was the secret. Basically, getting everybody together off the same hymn sheet and bang, and that was it.
Yeah, and I think as much as Archie talks about the players having a good group of players to work with, you know, we'd be the first to say, you know, if it weren't for the gaffer, Archie, Dodgy, the staff, they set the standards. You know, Archie talks about going in there, and I remember I came up from Everton the year previous, and I just signed a big, I think it was a Nike deal, you know, all the best gear because I wasn't the best dressed. And I had to put a shirt and tie on. And I had one tie. Lads called me Willy One Tie for the first one. And I only had one tie.
As you can see, nothing changes.
No, no changes, no. But, you know, it is a culmination of everything. But I think the standards are set from your management. Obviously, the recruitment, bringing decent players and good players in. But it's the culture that's set in the dressing room. And, you know, as much as Archie will say, you know, about the players, I think we'll be the first to say. It's not often, Daryl, you'll get, if the lads are having a day out, that the first two on the top of the list will be the manager and assistant manager. You want them there. You want them there to pay for it, obviously. Yeah.
But, it's amazing you say that, though, because when a lot of people talk about Walter Smith and Archie Knox and that management team, they can be brutal at times. But it sounds like they were also your good friends.
Respect, I think it's for me. It was about respect, you know, and whether Archie or the other good cop, bad cop, sometimes I played it differently, you know, sometimes we're both bad cops. But it was just a respect for, you know, I've got to say, I didn't know the gaffer when I came up. I knew Archie, obviously his time at Manchester United, but I didn't know the gaffer before I came up from England. He didn't lose it much, but when he did, you always knew he was in charge.
Yeah, a 44-match unbeaten run as well that season, amidst everything else, Mark.
Just wild. Yeah. It's like incredible, an incredible achievement. I'm going to say a smaller squad back in the day. We dealt with, I'm going to say, 18, 19 players.
And you had injuries that season as well.
But everybody that came into the team, you know, stood up, you know, was there. We were all accountable for everything we were doing. It was an immense period within an era where you're trying to, you know, do your best you can, you know, to get to the nine. I mean, we were just number three, number four, number five, and then you keep going and you keep going, and it's purely a nucleus.
Well, this was five in a row this season.
Yeah.
I think the season previously, when Archie and the gaffer had taken over properly, when they brought the players in, like Andy Gorham came in, David Robertson, myself, Mikhailichenko, Dale Gordon. It was the second season when we went on. We only brought two in. You know, Big Slim came back and Trevor came back.
Yeah.
And I think Spack has left. We didn't.
He did.
So you had the built a group. The staff had built a group to have a real go. I mean, nobody could foresee what was going to happen that season. But the hard work could be done, you know, the season before, I think.
Yeah. But see the one thing about it all, you know, with these players, he didn't do any coaching. I mean, I did my coaching when I was, you know, Aberdeen and Manchester United with young players.
Yeah.
You know, but with these guys, it was a case of saying, right, we're going to training, no messing about. We do our training properly, and they always did. Pre-season training over at Choco for the 6 years that I was there up at Choco was never a day where you had a problem as regards to training.
No.
Never one day did I have a problem with the training, the attitude towards the training. And
you assembled a real group of winners, though. I assume even training was competitive. Did it boil over at times? I'm sure it did.
There was some. There were some moments.
Most
all right.
Days.
There's no.
There was a lot of.
There's no question. Yeah. But you know, then these lads, you know, they were there to work. They were there to do their job. And it wasn't a case. How are you going to tell him or McCoy's how to score a goal? How are you going to tell him how to play in midfield?
Yeah.
It didn't happen like that. Walter did any coaching that was done and stuff like that. I just did the bits of training and said, right, well, that's what you're bloody doing today, and make sure you do it in the proper manner, or you pay the consequences for that.
And do you know what I think the key was there as well? We didn't have a training ground. Yeah. You know, officially, you know, now you're at Murray Park and whatever it is, everywhere, all over. But we used to get in a minibus in the morning, and that's when the spirit was brought through, telling stories of what happened the night before or whatever, or where you're going, what you're
Jimmy
doing.
Bell at the helm.
That's right, yeah. So I think that was part of it. Mm. And when you say we had little rucks in the training at times, we'd all have to get back on the minibus. You know what I mean? There was still a bit of verbals going on. Yeah. So
was it like that, though, honestly? Was it like that? Because there were some warriors, ferocious characters in that team.
As I think you've said it. I think we've said before, it's sort of a dying breed leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, and it's not, I'm not saying it's a better day now than it was then, but we had seven or eight captains in there. You had leaders, you had warriors, as you said, and you had people who were just committed to win.
The secret was, when you was picking the teams, when we were playing against each other in training, you'd keep the guys that had the sort of the heat under the collar type stuff, right? They're easily right on the same side. That's
it's a skill.
Is that like even picking training carefully?
Aye. But you maybe fell out with a couple in fairness. Yeah.
Did you?
Just a few.
He never used to put me against Gazza because I used to take the ball off Gazza. No, maybe the other way around. Hey, you know what I mean?
Other way around. That was a couple of years later. Yeah. Right, there's so many games I could pick out in that season. I was watching back some of the old videos actually in preparation for this, but clearly the European run is a good starting point because it was the new Champions League that season. And the first aim would have been to get in the group stages. Mm-hmm. I actually watched an old video of you, an interview, and you said, this is the season we really want to make progress in Europe, you'd said on tape.
Yeah.
And boy, did you do that, starting off with Lyngby and then, of course, Leeds United.
I think getting Leeds, once we got Leeds United out of the way, which was probably one of the toughest games that we'd have that year with the team that they had. Getting that out of the way. Once you beat a team that full of big stars, big players, good players, then you think you can get anywhere. That's how the confidence went, especially when you've got a lot of winners in the team. So you're going bump, bump, bump. Mm-hmm. You know, the run of so many games unbeaten in a period, it grows very, very quickly. And you know, that's the players. And his job then, and Walter's job then, is just to keep a lid on it, really, isn't it? It's to keep everybody focused, because we're winning this game, winning this game. And as soon as the draw came out, I actually said to Walter, I think we could go all the way here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at the teams, there's Marseille in there, obviously, they were the big team, but every time I played against Marseille when I was in Europe, I always scored against them. So I felt really, really confident from the confidence that we'd already built up going into that. So it was like a snowball going down a mountain. It was getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Let's just go back to the Leeds game, because I think you watched Leeds, didn't you?
I did watch Leeds.
Ready for that tie. You went to watch them. Was it against Stuttgart?
Against Stuttgart and Barcelona. You know, I think they'd beaten, there was a playoff game. Something had happened.
An eligible player, I think it was, wasn't it?
That's right. And I went to Barcelona to watch them. And they got through in that game. And I got invited by the Leeds directors that night to go for something to eat with them, you know, because I was staying in the same hotel and stuff like that. Well, when I come out of that, I'm thinking to myself, they think they're home and dry here. You know, they were so confident about saying, Rangers, just a small league up in Scotland, and we've won the league down in England with all these big teams in it. And I came back and I put that. And I also used to do the bit where if there was anything, you know, in the papers or anything like that about the team, or, you know, or somebody saying something about our team, I'd pin that up in the dressing room wall and say, have a read at that, or what he said, prior to a game.
Yeah.
And there was plenty coming out for Leeds at that particular time. So that was, the players were all aware in the dressing room, you know, about how they thought that they could do us. Yeah. And I remember sitting in the dugout when McAllister belts one in for the edge of the box, and I'm saying to myself, what the hell did I put all that up for?
Well, no away fans, so I mean, it was completely silent when Gary Mack scores that unbelievable goal at Ibrox to put Leeds ahead, and that was the first leg, obviously.
I don't know if Martin remember, but prior to that, you know, the Leeds and Stuttgart, I remember thinking, I think some of the lads wanted to play Leeds, Battle of Britain, and play against it. I was a little bit not sure. I looked at the four-man midfield, probably as good as they've been in the Premier League. You know, you look Gary Speed on the left, Strachan on the right, McAllister and Batty, all internationals. So I wasn't rubbing my hands against Leeds, I think. But no, it was going to be a cracker. And as you say, put Coyston in the opposing 18-yard box, goals. Put him defending an 18-yard box when it's a cross coming in. And I can remember the last thing shouting to him, stay on the edge, Gary Mack's on the edge, he can hit him. Of course, he comes a bit deeper, it comes out, and what, I mean, fantastic strike from Gary. And as you say, it went from the noisiest atmosphere I've probably ever played in to absolutely quietest.
I think Gary Mack told me the story, he ran past Ali, winked at him and said, how did you like that? And I think Ali replied later on in the match. You all remember that game inside out, Lukic, the own goal, and then, well, you know about the rest.
Absolutely. The reason after I scored that,
the volley.
It mirrored Gary Mack's goal. Yeah. I mean, same sort of period of time. It was like 3-4 minutes.
Yeah, right at the start of the second leg.
Right, the same. Yeah. So it was imaging the first leg.
Yeah.
And I come running over to the dugout, and I just stood in front of the dugout. it was to Howard Wilkinson. It was to Howard Wilkinson, because Howard Wilkinson was my first manager on under-12s for South Notts. So I just stood there in front of him, and you were all jumping up and down like that. And Howard Wilkinson has just sat on the bench, and he's just applauding it. Mm. So that's, you know, game on.
What a goal that was. But what was in your mind when the ball drops? Because it was so early in the match.
I had a quick look at. I was so surprised that Jasper had won the header. Ian Durant. Ian Durant had won the header.
That's
right. It was all shock. It must have shot the goalkeeper as well. But as I was running across to that to the angle for the flick on, I'd had a look at the goalkeeper and he was not in the right place. Yeah.
I remember thinking, what are you doing, Mark? Great goal, son.
It's one of them. As soon as it left the foot, you knew it was in the back of the net. It was
two World
so
Cup
sweet.
Goals.
I was going to say the assist for the second wasn't bad either.
Incredible.
I get more pleasure from the second. Because Alistair, worst header of the ball in the world. I mean, come on, what about
Well, he couldn't have missed, could he?
World-class cross, obviously.
World-class cross, and he really couldn't have missed.
They were stunned, weren't they, Leeds? Because even ahead of that set, even having lost to Ibrox, I think they still felt, their fans felt, they were going to see that tie through. That was a team with Cantona and some of the other players you've just mentioned.
That's right.
Second goal, after the second goal, the Leeds fans there was applauding the second goal.
I got the heads up from one of our supporters. As regards Leeds, and we're up at the training. As you say, we didn't have a training ground or anything like that, and we were up near Arnisland. Arnisland. This guy appears at the side of the training pitch, and he says, "I hope you don't mind, Archie." He says, "I'm Stuarty Daniels, Kinnan Park loyal." He says, "I've been watching my match of the day videos, and you'll need to tell the boys." He says, "To watch this in Cantona. If you touch him in the box." He goes, absolutely spread-eagled. I says, well, that's fine, and that's good of you to tell us that, Stuarty. Okay. And I remember going down to Elland Road where there was no supporters. Yeah. And the bus draws into Elland Road, and there's a guy standing just as the bus draws up. He's standing there with all the Leeds scarf, Leeds hat, Leeds scarf, Leeds top, the whole lot. And I'm thinking, what's this guy doing? And then all of a sudden, as the boys started to filter off the bus, he lifts up the Leeds top and he's got the Rangers top and he's saluting the boys as they come off. And that was Stuarty Daniels, Kinnan Park loyal.
There you go.
And I mentioned them in my book and he was absolutely delighted with that.
Yeah. Well, listen, that Battle of Britain was unbelievable, but it set you up for the group stages. I'm going to come back to the story that you're going to hopefully tell us about what happened, the phone call you got. Let's get through a couple of the games first of all, because you're in with Marseille, who had a phenomenal team of players. CSKA as well. The game, actually the away game, I think you played in Bochum, didn't you?
That's right.
Because the weather was so bad in Russia at the time. And obviously Club Bruges, another really good team at the time. But I think you've already said to me, you felt, as soon as the draw was made, you felt confident that Rangers could go all the way?
All the way. Home form, I thought we were unbeatable. Couldn't get beat. Maybe draw, but always better. The team was built to play away from home. We was goalkeeper, superb goalkeeper. Back four, phenomenally good. Created midfield players, and you've got two guys that could score goals at any given moment. So we could go from defence, boom, 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 as we did against Leeds. Yeah. Under the pounding for 10, 15 minutes, and you go up on the other end of the game and kill the game within, I'm going to say, 10 seconds of being under the cush for 20 minutes. That's what I saw, and that's how I saw the team. Better playing away in Europe than playing at home, but fortress. Ibrox was a fortress. Yeah.
Do you know who was fantastic in that game against Bruges? Our top player, Neil Murray. Do you remember that?
He had a big role to play that season.
Unbelievable. Neil Murray had a fantastic game over in Bruges.
Yeah, the Marseille, I've got a couple of pals who've coming up from England. They've been to a Rangers game. They're more looking for the night out after it rather than because I've told them it's a good night out.
So were you.
But if we lose, we won't be going out. We'll stay back at the hotel. So you can imagine them with 15 minutes to go, we're 2-0 down. They're going, it's a good game, decent atmosphere, but we're not getting out. So then obviously, Big Mark gets one and Swiggy gets one, and you know they were jumping about for.
Well, the Gary McSwiggan goal, I think it was his first touch. In a European game for Rangers. You'd appreciate that header. That was to make it 2-1, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was indeed. And given another 5 minutes, we'd have probably gone on and won the game. Yeah.
But that was about the spirit, wasn't it, in the group then? 2-0 down against the group, like the players that we were playing against, you know what I mean?
I think it was
Sozi and Boskic, and they had so many, didn't they?
Young Stephen Presley coming into the side.
I was just going to wait to say that. Elvis played.
I think it was a mix-up between him and the goalie as well, wasn't there, for one of the goals. But you still come back and then you go and play Bochum in Bochum against CSKA, you win 1-0, big deflection in the Ian Ferguson strike, if that's you remember. Right. Yeah. You've mentioned that the Club Bruges game away from home, Hoekstra scores to make it 1-1, and then again Club Bruges the following game back at Ibrox, Scott Nisbet's goal to win it, Mark. One of those moments, I guess.
It was one of them moments, but you were out warming up before the game, and the undersoil heating hadn't worked.
Right.
It hadn't worked.
So and bits of the pitch.
I said to the goalie, because the goalie was up the other end, right? And I said to the goalie, see, you need to check your boots, and you need to go and check that end, because it's all frozen right on the edge of the pitch to the penalty spot, just that much. That's what it did.
Yeah. You know, just bounced on that little passing ground.
Yeah. Nizzy belted one, it got top spin. Yeah. It bounced on right on the edge of the D and bounced right over his head into the back of the net. Yeah. Yeah. As Nizzy always says, he always meant it, sort of stuff, you know. So but that it was picked up on. I picked up on it because I always used to go off and train on by myself, get some crosses in and have some shots at the goalie. And I could hardly keep my feet up at that end up at the Copeland round end.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. Once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists assign a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
BT Sport Pods.
The reason I really wanted to mention that game, the home game in particular, because you were sent off in that match. Now, I think a lot of people know the story now of Marseille, and eventually later that season it was proved that there was some underhand dealings and they were demoted to the French second division, they were stripped of their French title. There was a long court case, as you know as well, and a lot of people feel that it should have been you guys in that European final
100%.
And not Marseille. No one around this table feels it more than you, Mark. Can you just tell me what happened after the draw for the groups?
After the draw, I thought it was a great draw. You know, I thought we would, you know, we would come probably one of the underdogs, which would take the pressure off us, the way we were built to play and what have you. That's why I said I thought we could go all the way. I was in the Moat House. I was sharing with Trevor Stephen, and a call came before we'd even kicked the ball. As soon as the draw had come up.
Trevor had been at Marseille the previous season.
Yeah, absolutely. So he knew what was going on at the football club back then. And we're just sitting there, the phone rings, and it's come through the operator down at the hotel. Right. So it comes up, and hello, with the French accent and all that. And they say, I am an agent, and we would want to make sure that you do not play against Marseille and all this sort of stuff, right? So
they were asking you not to play.
But I'm thinking, this is either Ian Durant or McCoist winding me up here. So I said, good night.
Did you think anything more of that?
No,
before the Club Bruges game,
three times it came back to me. So this is dead serious, and I just put the phone down. And Trevor said to me, "What was that?" I said, "I think it's one of the lads messing around, blah de blah de blah, you know, offering you not to play in the game, blah blah blah." So completely forgot about it. So the game started, bump bump bump. We had a good start. We got ourselves into what I thought. With a 2-2 against Marseille, for me they were the team to pull one over on, and I thought away from home we could beat them, you know, more so in the home game. The games went well, and then soon as the Bruges second back-to-back game at Ibrox, I mean, it was 18-19 minutes into a game where I've got a centre half hanging around my neck, push him away, go at the ball, hear the whistle go. So, that's a free kick for us. as soon as I turn around and there's a red card that far from me, couldn't wait to send me off. And as soon as that happened, you know, the penny dropped from that, the previous phone call. You know, unfortunately for us, that wasn't found out till, you know, a while.
Allegations were made a long time after, but that same night, that same night, I think Marseille beat CSKA 6.
Crazy.
CSKA, I think, were a team that knocked Barcelona.
One of the favourites. They were one of the favourites.
When that result came through, Stuart, were you, I mean, I guess you were stunned, because you've just had a really good result, but you're thinking, Marseille put six past.
To be fair, Darrell, at that time, no, I think we were all just, because obviously we'd gone down to 10 men, and I think it was, I think in that route, we had a little bit of luck along the way, a couple of deflected goals and that, but again, it was a spirit that came out, 10 men against a good Bruce side, and I think we were just overjoyed. It was that. My feeling, it came at the last game against CSK, when there was, you know, they...
You had to win in hope. That Marseille slipped up against Club Brugge.
That's right, and they, I think Brugge scored, lost the goal in the first 2 minutes, and they just never looked like scoring. But I think after the game at Ibrox, the last game, the sixth game, it was 0-0, CSK celebrated if they'd won the Champions League. And that's the only thing that resonates with my mind. Why were they so absolute happy and delighted at a 0-0? I think they finished with 2 points in the league. And that was the biggest stunner for me. The fans were superb. We'd gone, you know, obviously gone all them games undefeated in Europe. But going round the lap of honour, their players were still celebrating a 0-0 at Ibrox, and that's the only thing that, I mean, I don't know what went on, and officially obviously Mark's got more stories to that, but for me, I look back at people, say, oh, you must think cheated. I always just take the positives out of it. What a run. Yeah, what could have been, but in the end,
what could have been, but it should have been.
Well, that's you obviously,
you're 100%
you're definite about that.
Well, the man went to prison.
Yeah,
he was convicted
for
paying off two Eastern European referees. And one of those referees was the guy that sent me off. So, you know, playing in Italy, you become accustomed to certain stuff like that, you know, because that's what used to happen in European football.
To not to get to the final that year in these circumstances were, you know, because that was 10 games undefeated. 10 games undefeated in Europe that season for the level of team you were playing as well. It was a phenomenal run.
It really was. And we've not mentioned the Marseille away game.
Had
you won that, you would have been through to the final.
Yeah.
You got very close. What a goal Ian Durant scored.
Great goal for Ian Durant,
It's like a Champions League semi-final, isn't it? We knew that game. Yeah. And the thing was, we were going over there without Mark. I think Koistin, Ian Durant probably played just off him. But the strike, I mean, Sozi had hit one for them. He was a top player as well. I think I was probably picking him up when he rifled one in the top corner as usual. But Wee Geranti's goal from the corner comes down to him. And we pushed, and we won as though we went and thought we'll try to get a point, even though we had a couple of big players missing. We went as we normally do to try to win a game. And if the big fella had probably been, we'd have had more chance naturally. Yeah. But it won't to be. But it was, again, it was another great show from us.
It was. Do you ever kind of reflect back and wonder what might have been in that final against Milan? Had you been there, Archie? Do you ever look at it like that?
Not really, you know, because once it's over and done with, then what's the point, really, of sort of torturing yourself and saying, oh, if we'd got there, we would have been looking forward to playing against them and had a good chance against them and that sort of thing.
Well, it's a big regret
for me, because it was my old team. You know, I'd only been away there for 4 or 5 years. So it was still the same group of players, and a great opportunity. It's once in a lifetime opportunity for most players to get to a Champions League final. Well, Champions League as it was,
and of course at the start of the next season. At the start of the next season, when we signed Brian Laudrup and Basil Boley, and Basil Boley had scored the winner in the cup final, and that was the bit with Chet Young. Where Walter, you know,
famous interview. Walter,
famous interview, and what he sent to Walter, and well, Walter, but you know, Basil Boley and Brian Laudrup, and he says, are these guys good enough to play in Europe for Rangers? And they'd played that number of games, and Basil Boley had scored the winner in the cup
final.
And of course, Walter told him what he thought of him.
It was always going to be difficult the next season to do what we'd done, you know.
Well, that was going to be, by the way, Brian Laudrup worked out, okay. But my next question was going to be, having said what you had said at the beginning of that 92-93 season, that Europe was such a priority to prove people that you could really go on good European runs, is that maybe one thing when you look back, Stuart, that you didn't kick on and maybe replicate that?
Yeah, again. I think so, definitely. I think it was a unique season, wasn't it? You know, when you look back, 44 games undefeated, as we say, in all competitions, but certainly in Europe. And then when you bring the calibre of, you know, Brian Laudrup and Basil Bolley into your club, you think, obviously, you're only going to improve. But it's funny, because when you go over, I was fortunate to be there for 7 years, and you'll talk about Laudrup, you talk about Gascoigne, George Alberts and all the Amoruso that came. But that 92-93 season, you know, the likes of Ian Ferguson, David Robertson, John Brown, Dave McPherson, you know, all the homegrown Scottish boys, if you want, obviously Geraint McCoy, all the ones that we've mentioned. For all the great players that Archie and Walter brought to the club in the end, that season was our best ever season. And, you know, unfortunately, as you say, I think it was always going to be difficult to follow a treble and an unbeaten run, as much as we tried, and European didn't go great, to be fair.
No. And obviously could have the players you had, but you've already mentioned the goals that you and Ali McCoist combined for that season. 78, I think it was. You had some incredible strike partners, didn't you? You played with some fantastic strikers at other clubs. So that partnership, why was it best. So good?
Yeah, best.
Was it the best you ever had?
For me, it was the best, purely on goal return. Yeah. I think that's what you judge striking partnerships on. I mean, Paolo Rossi, I learnt a lot from him at Milan. Ramon Diaz partnered Maradona for Argentina, at Monaco, Gary Lineker for England, all those players. Technically, could be probably a little bit better than Alistair, but putting the ball in the back of the net, there's no one like him. And one of my strengths to my game was creating space for a goal scorer. As playing as a lone striker in Europe for the 6 years, that's what's the name of the game, that's what you do. You create spaces, and when you get a chance, you put the ball in the back of the net if you can. And there was no better player that I've ever played with than Alistair that could do that. Mm. And you cast your mind back. If you look at Alistair every time we're building, Alistair's always never watching the play. He's just watch me. And it'd be in the space where he should be to put the ball in the back of the net. That's the art. Of a great understanding with two players and the rest of the players that play.
He got 49. Coming off the back of a golden boot. By
that's right. Yeah. I think the key as well was we had some good wingers. You know, we had Peter Hoostrom, Kalachenko, Dale Gordon at times putting balls in. But we scored from all the biggest one, the best one. The goalie used to always mention it, BFG.
Yeah.
Boot, flick, goal. He'd boot it, Mark would flick it, and Coyce would put it in the goal.
In the back of the
BFG,
net.
Let's go, which route are we going today? The gaffer, Hart, we'll go BFG.
Absolutely.
As much as we like getting it wide and playing, we could score all different, and that's what happened. Yeah. And going back to Elland Road, when we lost the won the home game 2-1, everyone thought, we always knew in the dressing room, with Coyce and Big Mark up front, we would score goals wherever we went, and that was a key.
As part of the management team, you knew it. That must have been the belief. I mean, you're going to score today.
Aye, absolutely, and that's what we'd like, BFG or whatever you care to call it. But McCoy's bit, the halfway line, the goalposts. Now, from there to there. You would never see McCoist in that triangle, or never see him.
You wouldn't want to see him there.
No, you wouldn't want to see him there. No, because he had to run somewhere, you know. And he was never having any of that. And when Mo came as well, the problem being then was the two of them were in there, you know, fighting each other to try and get a goal. But McCoy's bit was between the goalposts. That was where he wanted to be.
What a character
to manage in the penalty box.
What a character to manage.
Oh,
never on time and all that kind of stuff. No, working with them all. I know that's the truth.
I mean, quite incredible. But you never. I mean, it was a case of you knew fine well these guys were going to turn up on the Saturday, right? Mark, for instance, on a Friday. You never trained on a Friday, did you? He used to say to me, he said, look, I'm, you know, if it, all right, I'll just miss. But he used to come out and watch Walter going through the set pieces and stuff like that. Yeah. And they're right, this is where you've got to be, and that's where you've got to be, and that sort of
that's
stuff.
That's the level of trust you had for the players, though. You wouldn't ever question it, would you?
No, not at all. No. Oh, no. God, Friday, oh, no, he's not going to be there, sort of stuff. So
it was all different characters, Darryl, because Coyce was the same. Coyce and Mark never trained. They had the rubs and the masseurs and that. And we'd get offered it, Goffey and myself, being a bit older, but we always wanted to train. So every individual was different. I always wanted to train on Friday, as did Goffey, as did a lot of the lads. But the two golden ones up top, you know what I mean? They did what they want, you know what I mean? They just turned up on a Saturday.
From Thursday onwards, from Friday. Friday I was in match mode all the time, and that's why I didn't like to train on Friday, because there's no holding back.
Yeah.
I was flat out. Mm. And I think that's what Walter saw, Archie
Popper. Well, I mean, it ended up on a Friday. You know, they were in the training, so I had to go and get them a cup of tea and a bacon roll. And there you are, boys, right? You sure you're all right for the morning and that sort of stuff? So that was my job. Yeah. That was my tactical bit on a Friday, you know. Get them
make
a bacon
sure
roll,
okay.
Make sure they were all right for the Saturday.
Look, we've talked about the front line, obviously. I mentioned the defence as well. Richard Goff, absolutely phenomenal for the team back then. The whole defence was a great level there, wasn't it?
And the thing is, if you look at the appearances, I think Bomber's up at 50 odd. Yeah. David Robertson's exactly the same. Yeah. Dave McPherson, who played a lot at right back because Gary was injured. But we had the nucleus, obviously starting with the goalkeeper.
The goalie. Yeah. I mean, listen, we know Andy Gorham, what a player he was for Rangers all the years. Mm. But that season, one-on-ones, looking back in the videos that I did ahead of this, some of the saves he made, even during the league campaign as well, never mind the European campaign.
Yeah, I mean, prior to me coming to Rangers, I was fortunate to play at Everton with Neville Southall. Yeah. And I'd never, ever thought I'd ever play with a keeper at that level. Mm. Nev was outstanding. Yeah. And I still get a lot of stick from Evertonians now, because when I do my best ever 11, the goalie's always number one. And, you know, and how well, you know, Neville Southall was as a goalkeeper, outstanding. But I think in all the 7 years I had at Rangers and all the great players I was fortunate to play with, Andy Gorham has always been the one I would say would get in a World 11. Mm. When I was playing for them 2 years. Yeah. And that 2 year period before his knee injuries and that, because it didn't matter if you were pulling out the air against Stirling Albion or if you were, you know, whoever you were playing, Celtic, he would still do it, you know, week in, week out. And I always thought, Loudrup, Gascoigne, outstanding players. But Gorham, in a couple of seasons spell, for me, could have played in the World 11. And that's how highly I rate
him. It's in training key, when you're playing with that standard of player, your strikers can score goals at any given moment, and then you're training against the goalkeeper. You make each other better, and that's the game of football. That's a squad of players.
He would have the same reaction to losing a goal in training as he did in a game. Mm-hmm. Absolutely furious if he lost a goal, in training, and he would give defender stick round about him. Something you should have been tighter there, or you know, then something where you know, then if it's going past him. Then it's got to be a worldie or something like that.
That's the only time I actually ever fell out with a goalie. Only a couple of times. We'd play like six aside or eight aside, whatever it may be, and the goalie'd lose a goal, which is very, very rare. But then, so it'd be our ball. I was on the goalie side, so I'd make space to get it. He'd get out the net and boot it miles away because he was that frustrated at losing a goal. And Archie'd got the ball, and I'd say, come on, Archie, give us it. No, goalie's booted away, so it goes to the other team, so he'd never get. Ball. So that's the only time me and the goalie. I says, goalie, it's gone. You've lost it. I don't lose goals, you know, in his accent.
But you had a bunch of people that hated losing. Yeah. Really in that game. But also the midfield. I mean, some real characters in there. I mean, what a midfield that was to play. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people sort of said me and Fergie were very similar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We both give the ball equally away as we put it into Rose head. But no, Fergie was fantastic to play with. Great engine, good type, good personality. And then, obviously, the signs of that, we had a lot of alternatives. Peter Hooster, Trevor Stephen came back.
Yeah.
Dale Gordon, Wee Durante had dropped in. Yeah. So we had a little mixture of everything. But I think me and Ian knew our jobs. And it was to basically go and let maybe the other players, you know, do it. But Fergie chipped him in some goals as well. But like Wee Durante, that season.
He had a really good season. Seven goals, but most of them came in big games.
Always turned up in big games. Yeah. And I think, to be fair to the management, they always picked him for big games.
Yeah. You had to manage him, obviously. Because he'd been through a lot.
Exactly, but what a temperament. Mm. I mean, he was a Rangers player through and through, Durante.
Yeah.
I mean, as you all were, but I mean, Durante came from the area, the whole lot. It was his ambition to play for Rangers, and he succeeded and had the temperament for it.
Meant everything to him, didn't it?
He was just a supporter that was playing for Rangers.
I
loved it.
When I joined, he was just going through a bad patch with the injury. He'd been through one operation, he'd had his other operation. And unfortunately, or fortunately for me, I'd come through the same thing. I'd been like 2 years at Monaco without a game. So I could actually relate to how he was. I used to have a couple of chats with him, you know, keep working hard, you'll get your chance, you'll get back in it. All this time that you're missing right now, you'll get it on the back end of your career, just all that sort of stuff. And when he came into the team, boom, he was in the team.
You set him up for a couple last season. He was, big one against Celtic.
Listen, we all set each other up. It was, you know, it wasn't who was scoring the goals, it's just winning the games. That's all I was interested in.
Yeah. But see the backup squad that we had. Yeah. See the backup boys that we had. Gary McSweegan, Stephen Presley, Spenny. Neil Murray, Spenny.
Yeah, yeah, the young boys.
Greg Shields. Yeah. You know, people like that.
David Hagan, I think.
David Hagan, that type of stuff. Aye, that came in and played and... you know, did a good job for the team. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was great, absolutely brilliant.
It's huge that to keep the first team you like on their toes.
All Scottish boys.
Yeah. But then again, in that mix, you've got your leaders, you've got your Goffies and your Bombers. And even though David Robertson was a quiet type of guy, he had a winning mentality about him. Ian Ferguson, you can lead in lots of different ways, but I think for the gaffer and the agent, they had a lot of lads they could trust. We put our trust in the management, and I think they could trust us. They maybe couldn't trust us after the game, but they could certainly trust us during the game.
What was the saying?
Were you chasing them around a few times, were you? Next four matches.
I was one of the good ones.
No, before we was always going out, what we'd always say, nobody on the front page, boys. Nobody on the front page.
Can you imagine that group now? Social media and all that, Archie.
Oh,
these phones.
I think we actually did the six Sundays on the trot on the front page.
No,
we're still winning, so we're all right.
Yeah. I used to drive in from Houston every morning, and my first thing was to get a billboard and see, oh no.
Sorry?
I look at the billboard and say, oh crimmins, somebody else is on the front page, you know. Yeah. That's what you're worried about.
but it never stopped you, and by the way, we've just talked about the whole team. But to do it alongside Walter Smith, I mean, what a leader he was of the football club. I know it's still not easy to talk about Walter.
It's
still
not
very difficult. I understand that, Archie. But what a leader.
Oh, phenomenal. And, you know, tactically in that, Walter was first class. And he knew all his players and knew what he would get from the players. And they played for Walter Smith. They played for Rangers, but they also played for Walter Smith. Mm-hmm. And he was great with them. You know, there would be leeway. But when it came to the bit where Walter had to say to them, as Stuart's already mentioned, then they knew exactly, I need to rein myself in a bit here.
He was a friend. A friend would always tell you the truth, right? A friend never messes you around. You know, he tells you when you're doing well, and if you're not doing well, you need to pull your socks up. And he gives it to you. And that was one of his greatest gifts. Yeah.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family, and once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of happy head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists assign a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
BT Sport Pods.
You work with some top managers.
I like talking about Walter. I can't talk too long. Yeah, because you get.
We
had a night at my house after an Old Firm game. You were there.
I was here.
Yeah, we were all there. All the boys were there, wives, girlfriends, the lot. Okay. And some both at the same time.
that's another podcast.
So we, you know, tenants had been and delivered two big barrels of booze and all that sort of stuff.
Was this the night before the Celtic game or night after it?
Can I tell you, it was the night you kept dropping your trousers.
No!
I remember going through the tunnel when we got stopped by the police.
Yes.
Got stopped by the police.
So this was after an Old Firm game.
That was after.
This, so the 3 or 4 o'clock comes, right? There's the boys are starting to go. And then Ethel and Walter are left, and it's messing around, and we're just
go wash.
Yeah, sort of go. No, so Walter said to me, he said, "Come on, we'll go and sit in there, and just have a sit in front of a fire. We'll have a bottle of red wine."
Cigar.
He said, "I got any cigars? I got some cigars." So we went and sat and sit, and he was there. We talked about everything about from football, right? Films, music, everything. Just chat. Till about 6 o'clock in the morning.
This was you and Walter?
Just me and Walter. Well, Ethel and Mrs. were all tidying up, and everybody was trying to make the house presentable again, sort of stuff. And we just sat there, and it was the best night ever. You know, just chatting away with him, and you know what he's like with his music.
It's funny because the gaffer says it's his worst night.
Never forget that.
One of the best nights ever.
But yeah, I think for me, as I said, when I came up, I didn't know the gaffer at all. Didn't know him. And the first time, our first game, I joined on the Thursday, was Hearts away on the Saturday. And at half time, I'd come from Everton, we did okay. And we're coming in, we're 1-0 down. And I thought, we've controlled the game. And he's come in, and the doors burst open. And he's gone right up to the captain. I'll never forget it. It's all about standards. Gone up to Richard Gough right in his face and told him if he doesn't stop tippy tapping at the back. Because we were controlling the game, you know, and we were building up with 80% possession, all that nonsense. But you're at Rangers to win. You're not here to get number of passes and that. And he was writing off his face, and I thought, wow, that's the standards. Because even though we were getting beat, we were the best side, you know, when we were doing it, I thought it'll come. It didn't in the end, we got beat 1-0. But I only probably saw the gaffer lose it 4 or 5 times in the 7 years I was there. But that originally, I think he had to make his mark, because obviously taken over from Graham, you know, in the season prior to that. But he made his mark, and for me, we've got some unbelievable stories about him. But my end of the season, always ended up on top of the table, belting out not Springsteen, that were coisty, but you know, a rock song or whatever. Okay. I was usually under the table, but he was always on top of it with a bottle of beer. And as I said, the best sort of compliment you can pay to a management team is when you go leave the club and 5 years later you're having a, you know, get together. Who's the first people you get in touch with? Gaffer, Archie, Dodgy, Jimmy Bell, whatever, you know, because that was the core of the group, really. And not for me, and there's no Archie knows, as a manager or a coach, but as a person, couldn't get better. Can't get better. He was an outstanding individual.
A great friend of mine. Well, I'd known Walter for, before he passed there, 54 years. And in actual fact, when I started up, we went through the coaching courses and that together. Yeah. I went the year before Walter, and I was player manager up at Forfar at 28. And if we had a midweek game up at Forfar, he used to come up and watch the games. And when I was going in the tunnel up at Forfar at half time, I'd said to him, I says, if you see anything, come tell me at half time and stuff like that. So he'd walk along the corridor into the dressing room, and he's telling me, right? He's a player at Dundee United, but he's telling me what I should be doing about the second half or any moves. Yes. And the first one he would always tell me is, take yourself off. That would be the type of thing. You know, he would be saying, that number 8 and that's doing a good enough job, but you'll need to get tighter to him. And all that sort of stuff that you would say in the dressing room yourself. Yeah. I'd been as well saying to him, just you come in and tell him, right? And I'll set this the side. But so helpful in all these times.
Well, you went back a long way, as you know, all the Dundee United years. But he was obviously a great, great manager. But every bit of that as well, a great manager of personalities, would you say? Because you think of the way he managed to, in later years, get the best out of the likes of Paul Gascoigne and others.
Man management was absolutely brilliant. Man management, absolutely brilliant. I mean, you put them in there, we were working with the two of them, Alec Ferguson and that, you know, two of a kind. Two of a kind.
Gordon Strachan did another podcast, and he said to us, back in Aberdeen in the 1980s, you and Alex Ferguson, as he was then, of course, the bad cop and worse cop, he said. What was the relationship with you and Walter then? How did you play it with the players? Did you have to be different to different players?
There was once or twice I would go in and, silly, but I would attack somebody. I mean, I know this is maybe no part of this season or something like that, but I can remember once going in and we were up 3-0 against Dundee United and Marco Negri. Yeah. You know, Marco Negri, right? Yeah. So
I went right into Marco and I've attacked Marco, and Walters allowed me to go ahead. If I was out of a run and sort of, I would jump into somebody or something like that. So I attacked Marco and I says, Marco, for goodness sake, I says, that wasn't exactly the word.
That's not what you said.
I says, you'll need to run in a channel now and again, Marco, because David Robertson's got the ball, Mikhail Lachenko's marked, Stuart McCall or whoever was left midfield, they're all got people up against them. I says, you need to run in a channel there so we've got an out ball. And Marco says to me, he says, Archie, you come and watch me play? I says, yes, of course I watch you play. He says, well, you must know. I know do that. I said, well, fair enough, Marco. And he just went out the same half, scored another two, didn't he?
That was the game he got five. Yeah. Yeah. He had, what, 30 on before Christmas, didn't he?
So we're walking in the tunnel. Yeah. We're walking out the tunnel at Ibrox and Water says, you were a bit harsh on Marco there, you know.
Were you guys ever on the end of it? I mean, or you must have seen it at times from others.
No, I don't think.
No?
I don't remember.
You must have seen a few, Stuart.
No, only, I say, only me personally, one.
Even other people in the dressing rooms.
Yeah, I remember, and I actually remember this, but we were playing up at Hibs, and it was in trying to go for the 10, and I'd just come back from an injury, played a few games. Anyway, the night before, we had a lot of foreign guys in, you know, the Italians, everywhere. Yeah. And I think there was only a few Scottish left, there was a few injured, the likes of me, Gordon Jury, and we sort of, I don't know if Geraint was there, we'd had a sort of meeting with them saying, listen, this is a massive game. Hibs, we'd gone beating the Cup. The gaffer was getting a bit of stick from, because I think it'd come out that he was leaving at the end of season. Yeah. And so we've got to do this for the gaffer tomorrow. So we go down pre-match and then he names a side. And me and Juki had been given the team talk the night before, we're out of it. Yeah. I remember Archie gave the tickets to after the speech before we got on the bus. And he says, do you want the tickets? I went, no. He says, so do you want to be sub? I said, no, I don't want to sub, I want to play. Mm. And the gaffer's getting his bag, and that he says, no, I don't want to be sub. Like a spoiled boy, I wanted to play that much because I knew what that much his game
meant. You'd been there that long by then.
Yeah. And anyway, it was a big hotel with a one floor, and there was a window up, and it was a warm day, and I've gone out with my ballots. I took two tickets off Archie and pulled the door behind me, a big oak door, and the oak door slammed with the wind. And there's a dual staircase, and I've got my bag and I'm like a little spoilt kit. I'm going down, but there's all these Japanese tourists checking in and they're taking pictures. And I get to the bottom of the stairs and I look up, and the gaffer had gone absolutely, because he'd heard the door bang. I didn't mean, dang it, because the window had been open. And he got me at the bottom of the steps and got hold of me. He says, get your bags, get on the train and back to Glasgow. Mm-hmm. And I was like that. And then Archie come down behind me and says, get yourself on the bus, sneak on the bus. He says, you're still sub. So yeah, so that, and he was up, and he must have covered them steps. And I looked back, what a little picture. And he comes to half time and we're getting beat 2-1. And we have to make a substitution. So I don't think he wanted to put me on. He puts me on at 2-1. And I'm thinking, I'll show you. Yeah. I'll blooming show you for leaving me out. And did that inside 20 seconds, yes, goal. 3-1 Hibs. It was, honestly, 3-1 Hibs. But thankfully, Gazza scored a worldie. Yeah. Albert's got a worldie. And I put Marco Negri through to win 4-3 in the end. And after the game, I apologise. He says, no, it's okay.
But you talked about the standards. But I guess that little thing there.
Yeah.
That's what he obviously deemed to be not right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, what I didn't meant to do that. But that was I was that disappointed because I knew how much sort of pressure the gaffer was on. And the night before, on the Friday night, we're drumming it into them all. This is huge, this is huge. Make sure you get bed and do all this as if you're managing. And next day, Hibs team, you go. But when you're looking back, I just come back from injury. I played 5 games. I probably needed to come out. But it was just that emotion, and it was actually because I was almost getting my bags and going back to Glasgow. And actually, quick sneak on, don't let him see you. So I sat on the bus like a naughty schoolboy. But I only crossed him once or twice, but we always knew it was a gaffer. But the respect was the main thing.
So let's just get back to some of the matches then in that 92-93 campaign, because we've talked about 44 games unbeaten. You won the league well in the end, but your closest rivals that year, Stuart, were actually Aberdeen, second to you in the league. Cup final opponents in both the League Cup final and the Scottish Cup final. There was some titanic games against them. I think one in the early part of the season, I don't know if you remember, at Ibrox, you were 1-0 down at half-time. Uh-huh. Roy Aitken had scored, and Walter Smith, I remember seeing the old interviews, again, doing my preparation for this, saying that he really got into you at half-time. Do you remember the game and how it turned?
I remember the game because I remember, naturally, an ex-Celtic captain going to Ibrox, and big Roy Aitken was getting a little bit of stick, and he ends up scoring. Which Roy didn't do that often in front of the Rangers end. And we come in, as you say, 1-0 down. And now you mention it, yeah, I think that was one of the times I never saw him overheated, but they were both playing bad cop that day, Archie and yeah, obviously the gaffer. And fortunately we went out and, you know, I think we probably played as well as we'd played for a long, long time. But again, it's going, it seemed to happen so often. We'd go a goal down. It was as if we didn't come alive until we went a goal down, yeah, you know, and the same happened again. Go a goal down, come at half time, get a pep talk, went out and steamrolled and, yeah, in the end. And yeah, but they were the, you know, biggest rivals to us that season. Yeah.
I think you were injured that day, however, you remember the game. It was 3-1 in the end, wasn't it?
Never
in
remember a game, I never played. Archie.
And before I said to you before we started, you even told me the goal scorers.
I did, because I'd look at my phone.
Oh, I see. But listen, that was a big match. And later, yes, that season as, yeah, well, yeah, well, you got a massive goal, mm-hmm, in terms of the league campaign, because, mm-hmm, again, I think it was February by this point, going up to Pittodrie.
Got battered.
Andy Gorham was amazing early, yeah, stages of the game, and then you scored.
Yeah, we got battered. Honestly, they must have had a dozen chances. Yeah. Goalie made a, mm-hmm, dozen great saves. We get a free kick, Gary Stevens, mm, right side, quite a way out as, yeah, well, middle, yeah, of the park, I'm going to say. Mm. He just, yeah, drifted one into the edge of the box and I headed this ball and I couldn't believe it went in the back of the net. It was, mm, you know, it was in the corner, but not a lot of power on it. But yeah, we did that many
that,
times.
That was our toughest venue to go, yeah, at that end. Yeah. You know, Aberdeen, yeah, were really, and, yeah, especially at Pittodrie, because, you know, they weren't a love-hate relationship.
Well, ranging,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it was always a,
correct.
And that game, as you say, the goalie was outstanding. We'd gone, I think before, we'd won 3-1 and been really comfortable and played well. But that night, when you look back at it, you know, he made some outstanding saves and say big marks scored from maybe about 16 yards out. It was a, you know, it was a.
It gets further out every time he talks about, well, it. Yeah, yeah.
It was edge at 6 yard box. That box, not 18. But it did. It just hit a bit of sand and sneaked, yeah, in the bottom, yeah, corner, and then we just hung on and defended well. But it was a big result again, because I think he said, yeah, probably only 4 points behind us going into, yeah, that game, mm, and you know, if they'd have won the game, it'd have been closer. But yeah, as we said that season, you know, there's all different ways to win, and, mm, and that was a little bit of great but fantastic goalkeeping performance.
Yeah, tough opponents. I mean, of course, Celtic was always the huge game, and I think they, in the end, ended the long unbeaten run, 44 games, didn't cost you in the end that season. But the Dons were tough, and you knew all about that club and tough Pittodrie would be, taking Rangers back up there.
Because Aberdeen were so desperate. When Alec was at Aberdeen and that, then it was the old firm, mm, Rangers and Celtic. Mm. Yeah. You had to turn up for these games. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, ingrained in the players. And it was the same when Walter was at Rangers, you know, then he knew it would be tough up at Aberdeen or any game against Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. Just the same as it was against the likes of Celtic and maybe Hearts in these days as well. There would always be tough games, and you had to be at your best, and players had to be up and ready to play in these games and give it their best shot, yeah, which they always did.
Aberdeen in the cup finals as well. I've got to mention the League Cup final, because you got a big goal that day.
I did, I certainly did. 16-1, Darrell, if I remember rightly. I had a pound on it. But no, it was just when the back pass rule had just come in. Yeah. You weren't allowed a back pass, and unfortunately, it wouldn't have been a back pass because it was deflection. Mm. And Theo Snelders was in Aberdeen goal. He could have actually took it, but he took it on his chest and delivered it to me, and I put it through his legs. And later on, I think a couple of seasons after, he joined Rangers, and every training session, you tell him, keep your legs shut, Theo, you know what happens. But yeah, it was a great start right in front of the Rangers end. And we managed to, I think Big Shearer got a great goal for him that day. Yeah. And we scored extra time, I think, own goal, Gary, yeah, Smith. But again, another titanic battle against them, and we always ended up coming out on top.
And I think that was the earlier part of the season, but was that not, in a period of the season, the games just kept on coming, Archie?
Correct. That period of time where there was that 5 games in 17 days, right, and we won every one of them. And, you know, it was a phenomenal. And you're talking about, that was the Leeds and Aberdeen, Motherwell,
there,
Leeds,
right,
and Celtic was the last one. So 5 games in every day. And I can remember after the Leeds game away, you remember the old guy at the front door, George Gilmer?
Oh, yeah.
He was a security guy. There was only one security guy at that particular time. Mm. And I'm on the bus, and with the phone on the bus, and we're coming away from Elland Road, and I phoned George up, and I said, oh, what a result, George. Hey, fantastic. Aye, great result, but we've got Celtic on Saturday, right? And that was all he said.
That was it.
Yeah. That he was interested about beating Leeds.
Straight on to the next one.
We've got Celtic on Saturday. That was his aim.
Yeah. Make sure you win that game.
That was a brilliant run, brilliant part of the season that helped define the season, of course.
Incredible.
And then to finish doing the treble, a game that you scored in against Aberdeen again, which I think was played at Celtic Park.
I'm going to say, Celtic Park. What a place to go and get the treble.
Was that a side footer, wasn't it?
No, it was a 1-2 with Jasper on the left hand side, and straight through the goalie's legs again.
He had a problem with his legs, didn't he?
Yeah.
Neil Murray scored that.
He did. He did indeed.
But as you say, I think for Rangers supporters, you know, if you're going to win a treble and you can't do it at Hampden because it was game refurbished.
Yeah.
Best place to do it is at your main rivals, and they parted, you know, as well as the players and staff.
Well, it was the first treble in 15 years.
Yeah.
For the club, so it wasn't just a great season, but that was kind of
we should have done the treble the season before though at Dundee United in the cup.
That was one after it,
the year after it.
Yeah, we blew it that year. But it was icing on the cake. And then the best part of it is to go back then to Ibrox. And Archie gets all the lads, and we'll go down to the district, and we'll go to the Grapes Bar with the trophy. And how that you managed to bring that trophy back, I'll never know. But we'd spend, all the wives would say, right, give us an hour. And we were down and we visited the pubs on the Paisley Road West.
Mystery bar.
Always took the trophy.
My cousin Duran insisted that I said, you can't take the cup down there.
It's the house as well.
We lost the cup. I know, I'm beside myself. I'm saying, where do you get out of here? Where's the cup? Couldn't find the cup, the Scottish cup, and it came back. And know the sort of body and top, the person on top of the cup, it was all bent, you know.
God.
Now I'm taking this cup back to Ibrox. Yeah. If anybody knows that I've allowed that cup to go down to the district.
It went to the district, and then I took it round, me and Dukie took it out to the Grapes Bar with Archie as well. So they got a wee tour, the cup got a tour, and we managed to get it back, but... You know, they were great memories. You know, great memories. So we'll always hold them fondly.
I think that's a good story to finish on, guys. Right. Thank you very much for your time. Jeez. Really enjoyed that.
Brilliant. Thoroughly enjoyed it, Darryl. BT Sport Pods.